So, Craig Kenyon, welcome to the Retail Risk Podcast. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and a privilege.
No, not at all. Absolutely fantastic to have you. Now, Craig, hopefully don't take this the wrong way, but you're a face that's been around for a little while. People might recognise you, recognise the name. Before we get into some specifics, can I just wind you all the way back to the start of the career?
Yeah.
Were you sitting there as you were leaving college or school thinking, I want to be an audit manager for a high street retailer? Were you wanting to catch bad guys and girls? How did it all start and where did it weave together?
You know, if I go back to the beginning of my after schooling, I'm actually a fabricator welder by trade. 30 odd years ago, I was a fabricator welder and I was made redundant from that. And then I actually went to McDonald's as a starting point. I was a shift manager in McDonald's because they tend to, you get promoted quite fast because there's that many people. And they had a security team and they came several times to the store. I'm not going to say why, but they did. And I just thought, yeah, I quite like having that authority, looking at them, and people were scared of them, genuinely scared. And when I left there, I went to several other places, then ended up at a place called Electronics Boutique. For the old timers, you'll all know who Electronics Boutique are, a gaming, it's game. And they purchased Game and then rebranded to Game. And I was a store manager in there. And my shrink in Electronics Boutique and Game, because it was a dual brand at the point, was more or less zero every time we had a stock take, which was twice a year. And the head of loss prevention at the time phoned me and said, what the hell are you doing? Why are you defrauding us? What are you up to? How do you get zero? And it's not just about the £0, no. My variances, my plus and minuses on stock was about 10 lines. And believe it or not, that is, I mean, a lot of no, it's not just about the money, it's about how many variances you have. And it wasn't just luck, it was just management of stock. And he asked if I wanted to join as an auditor. But it wasn't an auditor doing compliance audits. At first, it was doing stock takes, then stock takes in audits. And he started to realize, this is not an easy job. This is a very, very difficult job because it's a very negative job. With what we do, because you're going in, you're saying your shrinkage is rubbish, you're going in doing controls and saying your controls are rubbish, and you're just thinking, you're pulling your hair out. That's why I've got no hair, by the way, because of years of doing this all the time. You just think, why is there so many idiots working for us? And that was my own personal opinion, and it just progressed from there. I went from doing audits, doing investigations, to doing the whole end-to-end of a loss prevention function. But at the time it was split. So I was doing audits and they had investigators. When the head of loss prevention left and then key people left, it left me because I'd been there for like 5 years. And I just kind of got into a position where I headed up the department. And the first thing I did was I couldn't get my head around having two separate departments under me, so one audit, one investigation. So I spent the next 12 months putting a strategy together where you could combine it and have one person doing everything, but they specialized. So that you'd have everyone doing stock loss investigations, you'd have everyone doing stock management and understanding where it's going wrong through the system. And then I had specialists who could do the investigations, specialists who could do audits. And I'd done that for a long time. And then I went to Europe as, what was it? I can't even remember what it was now. I was in essence a consultant. So I went into France, I went into Spain. I helped train the French when we purchased the French company. Same for Spain. And then Scandinavia, where I had to do the training and then helping them to reduce shrinkage. And then we closed a load of stores and the boom went to nothing and we went into administration. So just before administration, we ended up closing 200 odd stores, which was an absolute nightmare. There was positives and negatives on that. And I'll always say, because when I'm asked what was your greatest achievement, and people don't understand when I say closing 250 stores, it wasn't an achievement because a lot of people lost their jobs. The achievement was I was still working for Games. So I had to make sure every piece of stock from every one of those stores got back to the warehouse with a team of I think I was up at six at that point, and a load of external auditors. And between all of us in operations, we managed to get all that stock back with minimal losses. Where I thought we were going to lose £5 million, we lost less than £1 million. And bigger scheme of things, that was fantastic when it's high value and everyone wants the property. And then when we went into administration, after we came out of administration, I'd been put on a consultation three times while I put my team on a consultation. I decided I had enough in Game. I was at the peak. I think one of my guys couldn't understand because I had answers for everything. I understood everything. I understood the system. And I'm not an expert in one field. Some might call me a generalist because I know everything about everything, from analyzing data to investigations to audit to people management. But the reality is I just had enough. And I wanted something different. And in hindsight, was it the right decision? I'll probably never know. But when I went to my next employer, which was a logistics reseller as their regional security manager for the UK, I couldn't handle it. It was too quiet. I found it really difficult to do anything because you went out and done audits in logistics centers. You stopped fraud, but online fraud, but it was only minimal because we had so many controls and the company was a global company. So they had everything in place. And I got bored of it really fast because there was very little to do. And I know things have changed now, but at the time it was really quiet. And what really tipped me over the edge was a guy in Italy for me. And I had the biggest in Europe, the biggest logistics center. And he had a 25,000 square meter one. Mine was 500,000 square meters. And he turned around and goes to me, "I don't have enough hours in the day. How the hell do you manage doing your job?" And I'm thinking, well, my mine's like 20 times the size of your logistics center with five offices throughout the UK and Ireland, and you're struggling with a menial small place. So in the end, I end up leaving there and then going to Jacques first. So and the positive with that is I understood the electronic side because of gaming. I understood the logistics side because it was a logistics reseller. And then I went into apparel Jacques Vert. Unfortunately, they collapsed at the end of the day and they don't exist anymore. But the reality is, I got made redundant from there and panicked. And an opportunity came. I really did. I had no job. I had no job at the time. And I just thought, do you know what I'm going to do? A job came up in the perfume shop and I had two interviews for that. My first one was with the head of risk for Superdrug because TPS is a business unit within AS Watson. And then with the ops director and got the job. And I built a department, what was just an audit department really, into a sleek operational audit and security department. That's where I am.
So we've got all this expertise. I assume way back when at the beginning, it was inventory control and, you know, keeping a tight grip on the stock. Fast forward now, and we've got far more complications and complex retail landscapes. What does your day-to-day look like? And sidestep the fact that the stores have been closed. Let's assume, you know, we're back open. So, you know, and I'm really interested. I always have this theory that the biggest theft is probably, for most retailers, internal theft, not external.
Now this is where it gets complex. It's not as straightforward as you think.
Your opinion. Come on.
Okay, my opinion. In my world here now, it's external. It's not internal. And the reason, and this is where it gets a bit hard to say, I think I've got to be careful in how I do this. You have
It's just you and I talking. Nobody else will ever hear this, Craig. It's fine. Just you and I.
Okay. So you have an older generation working for TPS more than the younger generation, and they take pride in what they do. The reason people steal internally, if I go back to games world, the young, they join game thinking they're going to play games all the time. They have area regional managers, regional directors, as it was, who, shall I say, were maybe a bit harsh on them. So the reason why I had more theft internally in game than TPS was age and higher management. And that's going back 20, 30 years. So it's not about today. This is about what I saw. Now, where I'm at now, it's external rather than internal. And so if I look at it, I have to look at the age of people. So we have older people working in TPS, so less likely to steal. The younger ones kind of go towards more discount abuse, so they can sell it in different avenues. If the area manager is rubbish, shall I say, and can be a bit harsh on the people, then they'll start stealing just to get their own back. There's all these different metrics that come into play that's causing theft for me internally. I don't see it as much in TPS. Don't get me wrong, it happens, whether it be refund fraud, whether it be gift card fraud or loyalty card fraud, or just stealing stock. It does happen, but probably not on the scale you could think of, because they're older and wiser, and they just want to spend the next 10 years working in TPS, smelling nice and smelling perfumes. It's fact, but they do a damn good job, okay? It's not an easy job, and I understand that. From an external point of view, however, it's horrendous. I mean, if I look back when we came out of the first lockdown, I can look at this two ways. It was awful that we'd gone into lockdown. It was fantastic we came out of lockdown, but it was awful because you had the 2 meter rule, you had the mask that you've got to wear. And because we're a small site, so all our stores were small sites, or our small sites, you do not get as many people in there. So external theft has gone down as well. So overall, from an external point of view, it's horrendous, or was horrendous, and it will start again. But internally, it's not as bad. But then I look at the age of the individuals, my team as a whole, because believe it or not, my team are all, apart from one, is all female, which I think is fantastic, because they get a lot done a lot faster. What are they to say in that? But the fact of the matter is, I also believe that women do a fantastic job as investigators. They get the best out of people, whether it's because they're mothering and they're not aggressive, and it makes all the difference. But yeah, going back to your original question, we have more problems with our controls of systems than we do with people at the moment.
So I'm just going to pick up on that, because there was one word you mentioned there, or two words in fact, which was discount abuse.
Yes.
You said you have a problem with. And yes, lots and lots of organizations have these challenges. Is there anything you can share? You know, what were your problems? What have you seen? And what have you maybe changed to get management back on the front foot, if that's the right word?
We've probably made it harder for ourselves, to be honest. So we've, in one sense, we have all these controls where the system only allows you to do a maximum percentage discount. So we allow them to do 10% discount or 20% or whatever we allow them to do. It's set in place. They can't go higher than that. But we have one button that's a price override, and it doesn't show up hardly anywhere. And we have to use a data mining tool to find the price override, because it's not a discount, it's just changing the price. So still discount abuse, but the only way we can combat it is through a data mining tool, where we manage that on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And we have to look at certain key areas, because it doesn't show up that well. So we'll look at, because a lot of people who commit discount abuse always use the reward cards and loyalty cards. I don't know why. They don't just buy something for £20, what's £80. They'll put on a loyalty card as well. And you just think, why? Why are you doing that? So we can track it. We also look at what we've found is when they're purchasing as well, they tend to use credit cards. So you put the Lightly card, debit, credit card together, and then you just look at the amount of times they've used that card. Because half of them, what they then end up doing is using a different route, whether it be eBay, Facebook, or any of these big places where you can sell products, and they make profit on the difference. That's how they now do it. They don't no longer do refund fraud as much. And I'd probably say a lot of companies are the same. They go down either stealing or discounting and then selling it on and another guy somewhere else. So all we can really do is use the data mining. We manage it that way, and we're very effective at it. Got to say.
And actually, I just want to delve into the data mining bit a little bit more.
Yes.
Questions have just cropped up. But before I come to you on that, I'm just going to introduce a brief word from our sponsors, Sensormatic, who are responsible for making this podcast possible.
Now, more than ever, retailers and shopping centres need to create efficient and safe shopping destinations that can thrive in the most challenging of market conditions. Sensormatic Solutions uniquely combines insights into loss and liability, shopper insights and inventory visibility to help you power operational excellence and deliver frictionless, secure, personalised shopper experiences while driving revenue. Visit us at sensormatic.com to learn more.
So welcome back.
Thank you.
Craig, data mining. So, yes. So give me some specifics. So in terms of the price override button, the magic button, if I want to defraud you, and the thing that possibly keeps you awake at night, who can press that button? Or more to the point, who can press it and it actually do something? And then what do you do to monitor that? Does every store, do you run a data mining tool on it as a matter of course? Is it something you look at if stock loss figures get out of line? What's your specific process for managing that?
So it, because you're discounting, it doesn't affect the stock, it affects your margin. That's the big one. I think it used to be only management can do a price override. It's now everyone, because you've got to. Things change. Hours go down in stores, you have everyone becomes key holders and everyone has to be able to do everything. So when it was just the management doing it, it wasn't as bad. But now that anyone can press that button, it becomes a bigger issue. So to answer your question, anyone can press that button and anyone can price override from something that's £80 down to one pence or knock £10 off or £20 off if it's a friend or anything they want to do. So what we have in place is our data mining tool, which I have an individual who's my stock integrity controller who then operates that on a monthly basis. I don't like doing everything every day because it's very difficult because more cases you bring up, you don't have the time to do them. I'm not burying my head in the sand, don't get me wrong. I just think if you do it too much, it becomes more complicated because you get them all the time. If you've done it, do it every month, they've already done it. They're going to do it. Whether they've done it yesterday or a week ago, I can still deal with it. So we then look at different criteria. So we'll look at stacking of discounts. So they do multiple or try and do multiple discounts or a price override. We'll look at it against loyalty cards, gift cards, credit cards, debit cards, and number of times they've done it. It'll bring up all the relevant people who are doing it. And there's always one person that stands out who's done it 30 times over the last 2 weeks. And you think, okay, you're abusing our system. So we'll go in, we'll investigate a bit further. Then we'll interview the relevant person or my team will interview the relevant people and figure out what's happened. And then it's down to other people on then the next course of action.
And so in terms of the pieces, the technology that you use, is the data mining tool top of the list in terms of getting results? And is that an internal or is that an external?
No. So let's talk a little bit about technology in my life. Technology is only as good as the end user, whether it's CCTV, access control, alarm systems or anything. You can have you can spend millions on it, but you are still reliant on the store manager, the store team to utilize that system. And it's the same for data mining. I've used several data mining tools. And the one I currently use is not going to go into much detail, but needless to say, there are better ones out there in what I believe. The one I used in game is the same one that Adidas currently use, which is the Oracle one. It was called XBR at the time by Micross. And I think that's a superb system. It's probably one of the best on the market at the moment. And this is not publicizing. You can take the names out or anything, but it's just a good system and a user-friendly system, what I believe. And it's my own opinion, this. But where fraud and abuse is concerned, data mining is right at the top of the game in my eyes. It's the only thing where it'll catch someone committing fraud, committing abuse. And it's the only system that works effectively and accurately to find people who are committing any type of fraud. So at the top of the line on anything I go for, data mining is right up there. It really, really is. I think any business will know from where stock's concerned, the systems you have in place, and you can have the best controls in place, but if your system doesn't do what it's supposed to do, then you have system shrinking. And that's another layer of issues that come into play, because then you have theft, you have fraud, you have system issues, you have control issues, and you just think all these things hit you on a daily basis, and you've just got to figure out which one it is.
And so we've got data mining is the tool. So you're sat there. The data mining is the go-to. Mm-hmm. If you could add anything else to the suite of toys that you've got, what are you looking at over the next coming 12 months? Is there nothing that you want? Do you have everything? No,
I don't need much.
Okay.
Because I think it's about training your staff correctly. And when I say that, management and otherwise, I think that's the most important. You get it right with them, you're 50% there. I mean, have you ever heard the rule? Many years ago, there were in America, a bunch of loss prevention people got together and they came up with the 10-10-80 rule. Now, I don't know, and you only find it now and again. You can see what I understand the principle of it. And the 10-10-80 rule is 10% will always steal from you, no matter what. 10% will steal from you, will never steal from you. And 80%, given the opportunity, will steal from you. So you've got the 10% I'm not bothered about because I'm not doing anything. That's me. So me and you, you're the thief, I'm not. Just remember that, because there's two of us. I'm in a room. You've got the 10% who are stealing from you. These are the ones you can get quite easily through data mining, because they're prolific. They'll do it and do it and do it and do it. Then you've got that 80%. And it's stopping them. They're the ones you want to stop from doing the ad hoc fraud, or now and again, or getting the dinner money, or getting the bus fare home money. They're the ones you've got to concentrate on, because sometimes the systems you have, if you can stop one area or one issue, then you can concentrate on the other issues.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on there. And those people would consider themselves to be good, honest, loyal employees. But if you allow them to make bad choices, they have the possibility. Yeah. And I remember, again, a long time ago from my time in retail, long serving members of staff that would take a packet of biscuits off the shelf without paying and put it in the staff room every morning. But they would not consider that theft in the slightest. They would be horrified at the suggestion. Back in the day, Mr. Kipling's van used to visit every store individually, and yeah, there was always some massaging of stock figures, and depending on what ended up in the staff room or not. So I think you call that absolutely correctly. And you're right to say, if you get the systems in place where they don't feel there's an opportunity to make the bad choice, then that's the place to be. But it's a very slippery road, and one thing gets by and another and another. And I mean, I've said this before. I mean, I remember being trained how to, in the cash office, £1,000 bundle, put £990 in there, cash in transit, long time ago, not everything. It was weighed, but that was it. Mm-hmm. And it was within tolerance, and you just didn't put the stamp on the front. So when it got to the centre, it was, and you could build up a cash float. So I was taught as a management trainee in a large grocery chain how to carry a cash float, so you could have good hard cash in there. And then when you wanted some overtime doing, you could pay the 16, 17-year-olds cash in hand, and you would negotiate with them on their hourly rate. And the closer it got to a Friday or a Saturday, you'd get a better rate from them because they wanted money to go out with than on a Monday. And that cash was in a tin in the safe that all of the district and area managers knew was there, because they would audit the safe and just stare past this tin every store had in. So,
cripes.
I think those stories as well.
Yeah, I could go on with those ones. I remember one of the stores that we were losing thousands and thousands on, and it's back to controls and making sure you take away, because it's not just about internal, it's external. And in the perfume shop and TPS, many years ago, they were all closed counters, so no stock could really get stolen, but they've opened up a lot of them. So you've got a percentage that are fully open and you can just wander around. You've got them where they're half open, so you can still walk around. And I think what surprised me was they opened up all these and then said to the staff, go and serve customers. What I got from that is someone who stands behind a counter all day is not face-to-face, because that's their protection. Then you're telling them to go out and face them face-to-face with thieves, with people who come in and distract and understand what's going on. I had one store like that. And I mean, it was losing thousands. And she had a hotline into the ops director. And I get this phone call from the ops director, what the Jeffinell is going on? I'm like, what? Well, they've lost another £10,000. And in my world, my shrinkage is so tight, my total loss is so tight, I can't breathe, because you don't have enough leg room. You lose a pound, then you're over your limit. And I went in there and we'd done a training session with my team and their team, and all of a sudden now their last result was £400. Just put that into principle, that you have the right controls in place, both inside and on the shop floor, actually can make such a difference. And an MD said to me once, you can't control the outside, but you can control the inside. So what are you doing about it? And that, do you know what? That stuck with me, because you can have the police control the outside because it's their territory, but there isn't enough police. So actually, what do you do? Well, at that point, they walk through them doors. I'm not a policeman. I'm just a person who's protecting the assets of the business. So at that point, they come through that door. I'll do what it takes to try and negate someone stealing from us. And sometimes you can have security barriers, you can have CCTV. They don't care about that. What they're interested in is, can they get that Chanel, that Dior in a shopping center? Or if I'm in another part of the country, it'll probably be Boss Bottle or something. Because there's no difference in high end or low end in TPS, as in what a thief goes for. They just want a product, but I know shopping centers will go for the high-end product. So as long as you have the controls in place on the shop floor and it's human interaction, then you're halfway there to stopping theft happening. So maybe they might steal 5 out of 20 attempts, which is better than 20 out of 20 in my eyes. So yeah, it sometimes systems are not the best solution. Sometimes it's people. In fact, it is people who make that change, because I might be the owner of a department or shrink, but I have thousands of people, as in every single store and store team, who are managing that really. Mm. I'm just a cog in the wheel.
But, you know, I mean, how powerful, if you're a cog in that wheel that is all about empowering the staff and making them realize the difference that they can make, and, you know, and also giving them good practices, then, you know, if they are with you in protecting the business and view it personally when somebody tries to steal, I think that's all you can really do as a
yes,
you know, as a retailer, that, you know, you're on the front foot at that point and then you build from there.
Yes.
So one final question for you.
Go
retail
for it.
During 2020 and early 2021 in the UK has had an incredibly tough time. Mm-hmm. No right or wrong answer. Craig's crystal ball. How do you see the next 12 to 36 months in retail? What do you see happening?
So first and foremost, in the next, let's go the next 6 months to 12 months, because I think that's going to be relevant. You're still going to have the online and you're still going to have the fraud that happens online by both customers and fraudsters, but you're going to have the bricks and mortar. And as we have taken a break through furlough or whatever we've had to do, so have the thieves. So as soon as everything opens up and that 2 meter line goes away and everyone can go into shops, I'll tell you now, I predict that shrink is going to go vertically on external theft. I pity the supermarkets at the moment. The only lucky thing is most of them don't sell designer products. So they can't, the thieves are not going for that. They're going for the food. They're going for the clothes from supermarkets. But as soon as luxury brands open up, whether it be TPS, whether it be Adidas or Nike or Gap or whatever else, I'll tell you now, it's going to go vertically because all these people want to get out and steal from you. And that's what I see in the short term. And I think we're going to struggle to protect the stores because what comes on the back of that is violence and intimidation, which we all know, which is a hot topic at the moment throughout the industry. And that worries me. I think if, as to me, people stealing a piece of stock is not worth someone's life. And that's as factual as I can get on this. And to me is, and as I say to the team, and I know it's a difficult one for them, is if you steal, if they steal from you, don't run after them. Because the first thing they do is run after them. Because that's what they do. It's their stock. It's they're protecting their stock. So for me, it's more around, you'll see fraud go through the roof. I foresee it will shrink a little bit. There'll always be bricks and mortar. I think it'll just cut down a little bit, I would say. But I see theft going up. And I think fraud's also going to go up because people haven't got the money now.
Yeah, I sadly agree with you there. I think, you know, I think there's going to be a requirement for visible guarding. I think there's going to be some real challenges out there. And I just hope retail... I mean, retail is the epitome of agile, and you know, it's a very reactive industry. So if any industry can cope with those changes, you know, I like to think that retail can. But you know, I'm with you completely. I think it's going to be a really tough time as everything opens up.
Yeah, but we've been through a tough time over the last 12 months. So do you know what? Another 6-12 months, it's just going to be different. That's all. I think that's what we're going to see. I think, and it's to touch on with what you said about guarding, it's fine having guards, but there's only so much they can do as well. And I think that's where the problem's going to arise as well, because there's that many guards out there and they haven't got the respect they deserve from the industry, I don't believe, because they're still on the front line. And I think they're just going to be used and abused to stand outside in near stores. And it's back to, you've got to still treat your people right. And that doesn't mean the guarding company are not treating their people right. I think the retail has to treat the guarding companies right as well.
Yeah, it to work. And again, you know, you get to a level of organized crime and there's virtually nothing you can do that will stop that particular theft. So, but yeah, I think, you know, that respect across the board for everybody, guarding companies and your own staff is crucial. So, Craig, thank you so very much for being my guest on the Retail Risk Podcast. Fascinating. Thank you for your thoughts, insight, and random observations. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It has as well, Paul. Thank you very much for your time. And thank you, Retail Risk, for having me.
It's our pleasure.